Deborah did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across east of England as you listen. This is their story. In one of the worst-off constituencies in England, qualified healthcare assistants are being turned away from nursing programmes while hospital wards go understaffed. The expertise exists, the training facilities sit ready, but HM Treasury's spending limits treat nurse training as a cost rather than the pathway to care that communities desperately need.
I grew up watching my dad and my uncles head out to sea from Great Yarmouth Harbour, but I always knew the water wasn't calling me the way it called them. Even as a child, I was the one patching up scraped knees and listening when someone needed to talk. When I started as a healthcare assistant at James Paget University Hospital 15 years ago, I thought I'd found my place. I was good at it. Patients trusted me. But watching the nurses work, seeing how they could do the clinical assessments and make the treatment decisions, I knew I could do more. My daughter changed everything. During the pandemic, she was 13, and she'd watch me come home exhausted from 12-hour shifts. And instead of complaining that I was tired, she'd say how proud she was of the work I was doing. "Mum, you're actually saving people," she said one night. That's when I decided I wasn't going to spend the rest of my career wondering what if. I was going to become a nurse. I applied to University of East Anglia's nursing program in 2021. I'd done my research, taken the access courses, passed every entrance requirement with flying colours. The interview went perfectly. I knew I had what it took. Then came the letter. Despite meeting every criterion, they explained there were only 180 funded training places for over 400 qualified applicants like me. The admissions tutor called me personally. She sounded as frustrated as I felt. "The funding just isn't there from Health Education England," she said. "We'd take you in a heartbeat, but our hands are tied." I tried again in 2022. Same story. This time I applied to Norwich University of the Arts Nursing course as backup, thinking maybe a different institution would have different funding streams. The response was almost identical. Treasury spending limits meant they couldn't expand places despite desperate local need across Norfolk and Suffolk. I remember the administrator saying, "We have qualified instructors sitting idle and simulation equipment gathering dust, but we cannot afford to run that program at the scale we know is needed." That phrase stuck with me. Cannot afford? I started asking questions. How could the same government that had just spent billions on COVID support suddenly not have enough money to train nurses? Something didn't add up. In early 2023, I drove over to the UEA campus. I wanted to see for myself what no capacity looked like. What I found was nothing like what I expected. Entire lecture halls sat empty. The nursing simulation labs with their hospital beds and monitoring equipment were dark and unused except for a few hours each day. I got talking to one of the lecturing staff in the cafe. She was candid in a way that surprised me. "We have the capacity for double the students," she said. "The facilities, the expertise, the demand from hospitals for graduates, but the budget won't stretch. We're operating at half capacity because that's what the funding envelope allows." Back at James Paget, I started asking around. It turned out I wasn't alone. Three other healthcare assistants on my ward had been rejected from nursing programs despite years of experience and glowing references. Sarah, who worked nights with me, had applied twice to different universities. Same story each time. Mark from the stroke unit had been turned down from UEA, Norwich, and even looked at programs in Ipswich. All of them had been told the same thing. "You're qualified, you're exactly what we need, but there's no money." We were all ready to work. We knew the job, understood the pressures, had proven ourselves on the wards. The universities wanted to train us. The hospitals were crying out for qualified nurses. But somewhere between Health Education England and HM Treasury, a decision had been made that connecting all these pieces was too expensive. That's when I started digging deeper. Through freedom of information requests and conversations with people who knew the system, I learned that Health Education England had actually requested funding for 200 additional nursing places across east of England. The business case was solid. Projected shortages, aging workforce, rising demand. but HM Treasury had refused, treating the training budget as a cost to be minimised rather than an investment in desperately needed staff. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still working as a healthcare assistant, still watching. But I understand now that what happened to me is happening in every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The resources were never the constraint. The political will to deploy them was.
What Deborah experienced has a name, fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat government budgets like household budgets, as though repeating this false analogy makes it true. Think of how tobacco companies once assembled panels of doctors to argue that smoking was harmless, or how pharmaceutical companies funded studies to downplay addiction risks. The credentials were real, but the conclusions served the sponsors' interests, not scientific truth. In Deborah's case, when she questioned why nurse training was capped, she was told that economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. Every time Treasury officials cited spending limits, they were treating the UK government like a household that must find pounds before it spends them. But the UK government issues pounds. It doesn't find them in a drawer. The real constraint was never fiscal capacity, but real resources. Lecture halls, instructors, simulation equipment, and people ready to learn. All of these existed. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Great Yarmouth ranks 109 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 3. The constituency has 3,333 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £19.2 million according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.